Welcome to Operational Harmony, balancing business and mental well-being, where we achieve goals without sacrificing peace. Our host, Nikki, is the owner and founder of Nikki's Office, where she specializes in providing comprehensive office management services, coaching, and scheduling for organic social media plans, as well as creative media editing. Her journey through mental health and entrepreneurship not only brings awareness, but also equips her with valuable coping skills. This unique experience offers a fresh perspective on approaching challenges and innovating in different ways. Let's introduce our guest.
Hi, Nikki. I'm glad to be here. My name is Robin.
So
Fountain.
After editing
the Fountain
my
Effect,
podcast
I
with Robin,
kind of spent most
I figured
of my
I
life
needed
trying
to say
help
something
get
before
to be
what
the
I
best
say
versions
the
of themselves. And
I'm a very straightforward
what
person.
What they see is their vision for themselves, and that has
words.
Come in a lot of different roles.
And I have been fighting
them.
I was introduced with my mental illness
through A to Z client.
Very, very.
So I welcome you to my podcast.
So
what I wanted to bring to your audience today is a concept called using reverse engineering to overcome task paralysis.
But really, I'm not being blunt
and
to be uncaring.
It's not a new idea. I actually read about something similar
in the way,
many years ago.
Like, I don't use
what color
flowery
your
words, and I just say
but I really
things.
Like it, and
I have
found
been
a lot
to
of
the
uses
point
for
where
it
all
with
you can
my
do is
particular with the people in particular
but
that
at some
I work
point
with.
You have to make a decision.
Okay.
And
so how does
no,
it work?
This is not
how do you
me
start
advocating for anything.
Your
this
idea.
Does not mean one of your decisions.
So first, I'd like to start out with an analogy of
because
driving.
That should
driving
never
in a car,
be
riding on a bus, a train, something
there
going fast.
There are ways
right?
to get help if
and
you need it.
You're going forward
and
at full speed on the highway,
little
60,
steps
65
you can do
miles an hour.
To come back
you know
to
where
your
you're
life
going, but there might be a couple of options
again.
To get there.
And
on
my
the way,
hope
you're seeing
is that my
these
podcast
fly
can
by
help
you.
People
you're seeing some exit
find
signs.
That
you're seeing signs of what should I do? Should I pull off
that
and
gives
see
them
this
the why
roadside
to
attraction?
Stay here
should I stop and
to
eat
start
something? I don't know. I don't
so
know what to do. And so just
get
go
better,
full barrel
be better,
ahead.
Be better.
And then
it's not an
you get
overnight
a little
fix.
Bit overwhelmed by
I was,
making choices.
I say brain
and the difference
dead
to that is
about
that
10
when
years.
You have, when you go in reverse in a car,
not
first of all, you can't go very fast.
And so you
secondly,
have to find
you can
your
really
timing.
Only see one thing at
but
a time because you're looking in your
you
rear
have
view
to make
mirror
a decision
or looking over your shoulder.
Why you're still here.
And you notice
and what
every
that means
little
going
rock,
forward.
You see every bump
and I hope
coming.
That means
and it really
you
slows
find
the brain down.
Something
literally
that makes you want
on
to
one
stay
thing at a time.
You can build a wall between
some
you and that
given
option
looking through
and
a paper towel tube to just see
thank
one thing in a room
and
at a time.
Hope that the second half
and
of the podcast
that,
is
you can
important.
Focus on what came immediately before this, what came immediately before that, what came immediately before that. You're not getting stuck in a rabbit hole. You're not looking at three or four options to make a decision on. You're just writing the steps to break down backwards. And very often we are mentored or taught to break down large projects into smaller bits and chunks. And that doesn't make sense to everybody because what size is a chunk? Am I doing everything red or am I doing everything purple and green? Or am I, what's the chunk and how long should it take and how small should it be? So this also takes away some of that questioning because when you go backwards, it's very obvious. Also, what I like about it is that it allows the person, especially if it's a personal goal as opposed to a work project, for instance, that maybe they're not as invested in, to see that goal, that end vision, the final project in their mind at the start. And it can create some excitement and maintain some of the energy and the excitement around that. Like being able to see the puzzle box with the full beautiful picture instead of dumping out the pieces and not really knowing what it's going to look like in the end. So I like to use a lot of metaphors and analogies that kind of create the feeling or the vision that I have. And so let's take, for instance, well, let's go with somebody wants to start a podcast. As we both know, and there's a lot of learning along the way. Sometimes we have resources that we trust, a friend, a colleague that says, well, I use this product, I use this product, I use this platform. They're really great. Just go for it. You look, it fits in your budget. Fine. Awesome. Excellent. But if you just go plain from the beginning, you're in a vacuum, sitting in a closet on the internet, looking for different equipment. You have no idea. Is there a big difference between the $300 mic and the $100 mic and the $25 mic? Obviously there's a difference, but then you start researching what's the difference. And now you've gone 6 hours in a rabbit hole about microphones on the internet. And now you've completely lost your enthusiasm for the day. It's exhausting. Forget it. The learning curve is too big. So let's go to the other end of it. Your first episode is released. You're listening to it. The sound is great. If you're doing visuals, the visuals are great. The show notes are complete. Your transitions are great, from music to commercials to banter, conversation. It's all great. So what is the thing that happens right before that, immediately before that? You have to release it. You have to release it to where you want it to go. And so you need to know a little bit about that. And you look up very quickly. There's only one choice, usually an RSS feed. Okay, an RSS feed. I don't know what it is. I don't have to know what it is. I just need a product that does the RSS feed. And keeping within my budget, maybe I want a product that only does RSS feed instead of it being a component of a much more complicated platform that does a lot of things that I don't understand and maybe I'll never need. And maybe I'll ask somebody, or I can just go in RSS feed only. There are those platforms, but there's also integrations you could put into your website. We don't want to do that. We're not technology experts, let's assume. We don't want to bring somebody else in, pay somebody $500 to install a plugin that's free. So let's just go plain RSS feed software. Mm-hmm. So that's your next to last step. Very clear. And maybe you'll have some notes alongside of it, the name of a couple of options and the pricing. So now you have two options. You don't have seven. You don't have 12. You're not doing everything, you know, from the beginning and not knowing what you need when you first buy your first platform, when you pay for the initial software, because you have generally what the process is to get your first podcast uploaded. Mm-hmm. So right before you identify what your RSS feed is going to be, you need to research the steps to that. What do you need to have it? So what format do you need your audio in? Is it a WAV format? I forget. MP3, I think, is audio. MP4 is video. So however you record and edit, it's going to have to be in that format that this RSS feed strongly suggests. They'll say, well, you could do this or this, but this is going to have a better quality and it's going to go out to more locations and more remote locations and smaller platforms to be able to hear. Great. So now I know when I record, I'm either going to record in MP3 or I'm going to have to convert it very quickly, easily in my editing software. Mm-hmm. And then I go to the step right before that. Is this RSS feed? What other technical components are required for it? Is the size of the video, the colors, the whatever that requirement is. Again, so you don't start from the beginning and get to the end and realize you've done about five things wrong and you need to start over. And so you just go back. Now you could get a list from how to produce a podcast. And you get this very generalized list. Think of a theme, think of a name, determine your equipment. That's your like general list, but there's so many branches to go off from there.
So you can very quickly become in the weeds if you start from do a theme, because then your theme could be anything. And there's 500 billion choices and now you're in the weeds.
Exactly. And so you go with this beginning to end list, but you use it to make your end to beginning list. Mm-hmm. And I believe, and I've seen this happen, that it just slows the brain down and allows the individual or a small team to focus on one thing at a time, just like you would want to do when you're driving backwards. Mm-hmm. A lot easier to avoid a pothole going backwards than going forwards at 60 miles an hour. And so that's the general approach, and it can be used for a lot of things. It could be used, somebody decides a little bit later in life, I want to go to medical school. Okay, well, there's no guidance counselor from high school. Nobody's telling you from the beginning. You've been out of college, and now you're trying to figure out who to go to, who to get help from. Of course, there's admissions counselors, but before you decide on the schools to apply to, you don't want people selling to you. You don't want to have to default to some of the higher-priced career schools as opposed to an established medical school. But what is the last thing you have to do before you apply to medical school? Probably to find out what the requirements are for the different schools or what the top-rated schools are for a later in life. So you start at the end. I'm a doctor. I just finished my internship. Now I'm a full resident. What got me here? What were my internships in? What was my major interest? What was my school environment like? Was it small and focused? Was it large and I was just one of a million people? That might be hard for my personality. So you're imagining yourself as a doctor, you know, what happened right before that? What was that? And go backwards from there. Okay, these are the prerequisites. This school allows me to do a bachelor's to medical school entry with only taking organic science, organic chemistry, and anatomy, even though I took it 20 years ago. Body probably hasn't changed that much, but I still need to have a recent anatomy class. So what are my options? I have two community colleges, or I could do something online. What's my budget? What are the classes? What school is going to let me take only these classes without declaring a major? So that's the step before that. Actually, in the middle there was actually applying to medical school. So I have to apply. What do I need to apply? I need some recommendations. I need these prerequisites. Who am I going to get recommendations from? I don't know very many people. I'll probably have to count on getting a good relationship with some of my teachers. And so maybe taking an online class is not in my best interest. It may be in my best interest to actually go over to the community college or the university and take these prerequisites so I have the opportunity to make some relationships. And then you go before that. Well, I need to know what I even took in school and how that compares to what I need. Let me order my transcripts.
Wouldn't one of the steps have to be to make sure your transcripts still matter? Because I know some credits won't transfer with age.
Exactly. So, but you need to see what's on there mm-hmm. so that you can compare it to what they require. Maybe for some weird reason, I have to take math again because I haven't taken math in 20 years. So to know what it is that's expected and what you already have, what will transfer, what won't transfer. Because that's going to tell you the classes that you need to take.
So are you a coach? Do you help people through this?
My business now is a small business entrepreneur and small business consulting and coaching. And the reason why I differentiate that is they're not the same. Coaching, as I've been taught, I don't want to take away from anybody else's experience or training. For me, coaching is, first of all, evoking the client's own knowledge and expertise in themselves to know what to do next, what works best for them, and what they're likely to stick to. It also focuses on the future and not the past. The past is therapy. The future mm-hmm. is coaching. Consulting typically involves a little bit of expertise and a little bit more of direct guidance and direct action and advice. Coaching, you don't really want to give advice. First of all, people don't usually take your advice. If they do and it doesn't work out, then you're wrong. If they take your advice and it works out, well, that's the most ideal scenario. So I do consulting because I do have a lot of background, a lot of different areas. I've worked with entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, and small businesses for over 20 years. As much as I love working with individuals on their personal goals, it's one of those things that people kind of move in and out of and are less likely to invest in themselves. I also have a special place in my heart for people with a lower level of resources. So while I don't want it to hurt people, but I won't always get the people that I love to work with who have the resources to afford that kind of service. And it's one of the first things that gets dropped in an economic downturn, just like a gym membership or getting nails done or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so what I like about consulting is typically with a small business, I like the niche of the family owned, the small business where they don't have resources to pay a consultant $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 to help them prepare to scale, but they also don't have all of the holistic knowledge and expertise to get there on their own because they're usually just spinning wheels. Mm-hmm. And so, as I mentioned kind of in my introduction, I've just held many roles over the years where I've helped people through a process. And sometimes it does involve handholding. Sometimes they need that extra guidance, that reminder. I've worked with people who I literally had to fill out forms for them because it was just overwhelming for them to do it. Filing initial disability claim for their child because otherwise she would have had to go through 40, 50, 100 pieces of paper to dig out this doctor for this diagnosis, this doctor for this diagnosis, this speech therapist, and it wouldn't have gotten done. And she would have just felt worse and worse about herself. The shame and the guilt of not being able to follow through to help her child. So I did the initial application. She didn't even have to be there. She just handed over the big pile of paper documents, sent that in, and then I gave her the three pieces of paper that she needed to actually go into the disability office to continue the application. But she got to experience the pride of checking something off that list. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love to see, is the light in somebody's eyes, no matter what their barriers are. Because for anybody, a small success is a success. You bring that up to a business level where your family is counting on things, your client is counting on things, your employees are counting on you. And if it's somebody who started everything themselves from the very beginning, they don't know how to delegate often. They're afraid to delegate. They're afraid to let anybody babysit their baby. And sometimes it seems easier for them to do everything themselves than to show somebody how they want it to be done. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of education in it. And one of the things I do, and it can be used for, you know, personal gains or business, is identify how much of your time and energy you're spending on a low impact activity versus a high impact activity. So you have, I call them, well, it's the way it was taught to me, $10 an hour tasks, $100 an hour task, $1,000 an hour task. Now it has to be $20 an hour because nobody could pay anybody $10.
That is very true.
And if you have a business owner who's spending 50, 60% of their time on $10 an hour tasks, but they're losing out networking, communicating with their clients, creating relationships with vendors, getting proposals and estimates in on time and accurately so they don't lose money, it is well worth the $1,000 a month that they might pay a part-time remote assistant to do those $10 an hour tasks, or paying somebody $15, $20 an hour to run around town and deliver items and pick them up and pick up supplies so that the owner or manager can focus on $100 an hour tasks and $1,000 an hour tasks. And it's very similar in your personal life, although we don't always have the resources. For me, grocery delivery, best thing ever invented. I hate grocery shopping. It takes 2 to 3 hours. I usually spend more money because of those. Oh, that looks fun. Oh, let me make that. Oh, let me do that. I just go in my list. I buy almost the same things every week. I have an year-long membership for free delivery, and that's it. I don't have to think about it. So to me, that's a $10 an hour task, and it's well worth the $100 a year to pay the free delivery. And then that allows me to focus on other things that would bring in revenue or just a more value to me.
Yeah, in the past, when my money fluctuates because of what I do, being an office assistant, some people are like, well, I'm not doing very much right now, so I'm going to let you go. But at one point, my roofer was doing really well, and so I was doing really well. And I actually hired somebody to work with me to do some of the stuff that was monotonous and, like, boring that I hated doing and was ready to throw my laptop out the window when I did have to do it because I hated it so bad. And, like, she did it fine very quickly. She was great. I'm going to hire her back someday. And, like, she did, like, wonderful at those tasks. And she got them done whenever. And I was just, yay. That is not on my plate no more because I don't want to do it.
Yeah, and I think that leads into sort of the task paralysis at the personal or business level. Mm-hmm. You know, task paralysis, if I had to go to the grocery store, I would probably wait until my cupboard was bare before I went, because I don't feel like leaving the house sometimes, or I just know I'm going to spend more money, or it's really hot and I don't want to, you know, drive over there, or I don't feel like seeing people today.
Yeah, there's always an excuse. There's always a reason when, like, when you don't want to do it, when you can't decide what needs to be done first, there's always that, I can't, you know, I have two choices. I'm not going to do either. I'm done. I don't know what to do anymore.
You know, and then
some of it, like, some tasks that you try to do, you don't know how to do at all. And learning becomes astronomical. Like, why do I have to learn this? I don't know how to use the computer. Why do I have to learn how to do the most complicated things on it in order to do my business? And so that becomes a barrier.
Exactly. And that's why task paralysis is so closely related to procrastination. Task paralysis is one of the reasons for procrastination. And we just, you know, right away, we have to get away from equating procrastination with laziness, because 99.9% of the time, it has nothing to do with being lazy. It might have to do with not wanting to do it because it's boring, because it's monotonous, because you don't know how to do it, because you don't know where to start. Which part do you start with? Do I have to go to a class to use computers? Can I do something self-guided? And am I going to stick with it? Is it affordable? Can I afford to throw this money away if I start it and don't finish it? Or am I going to feel guilty about it for the rest of my life? But the task paralysis, it covers a lot of things, as does procrastination, as does perfectionism. A lot of it is covering up fear. I'd rather not do it at all than do it and fail or do it wrong. Sometimes procrastination is a little bit of rebelliousness. I'm a grown-up and you can't make me. Sometimes procrastination is self-care. And that is something that most people would not connect. And I had a client recently who said she decided that if you are doing something that feeds you, that lifts you up, it's not procrastination. She might take a break. She thinks that she should be creating some content, but she gets up and plays the piano instead. Well, it energizes her to have played the piano for 20 minutes or 30 minutes. She wasn't procrastinating. She was filling herself up for the rest of the day for something that took away energy. And now she's a better person for it. She's a better mom. She's a better business owner. She's a better manager because she took 30 minutes to play the piano. That's not procrastination. That's reallocating. That's refilling. For some people, it might be taking a walk. For some people, it might be stopping to prepare lasagna from scratch and get those noodles boiled for the next step. And often, detaching from that more task-oriented work allows the creativity to flow. We get really stuck. What am I going to write next? What did I want to write here? So you sit down and you take a walk, or you start cutting vegetables, or you play the piano, and the thoughts start coming. They just start coming to you. And you get up and you're refreshed and you just have that energy again.
For me, I know that when I'm working, I can make all the decisions. I will tell people what they need to do. I am very sure about what I'm doing when it comes to work. But then I turn around and walk out of my room to go get something to eat, or I've got to make a choice as to whether or not I'm going to get certain medical care. I have just as much wrong with my brain as I do my body. And so it kind of is one of those things where I got a call just before this started that they wanted to schedule an appointment. And I'm like, yeah, can we do that in like November? Because it has to be done this year, but I don't want to do it. I've never done it before. It's completely terrifying. And then that makes my anxiety go, nope, we're not doing this. Not at all. And so, but I know that I have to. And this is me being me. I know I have to. Can't handle it today. But by November, I'm sure as heck going to have to. But I pushed it off for as long as I felt I could. Because I don't want to do it.
Yeah. And then how do you get your brain back on track? Because even though you have actively put off the task of scheduling it, your anxiety is up now. You have to go back in and get creative, think about your next episodes, or writing something, maybe taking care of something for a different client. How do you get your brain back to where it needs to be? Because now the next half hour is probably a complete waste of time. Mm-hmm. So what can you do about that? And I kind of wonder if there is a reverse engineering approach to scheduling that appointment, like imagining that you're in it and everything is going smoothly. It's going, you've gotten all the information you need about it. Everything's going fine. The results are fine. It's all good. Nothing you didn't expect. So what happened right before that? Well, maybe you talk to other people that have had that test done or that type of medical appointment. Maybe you talk to one of the nurses in the office or the scheduling coordinator. Can you tell me more about this? Like, what does it really do? Because this is what I've heard and this is what I'm assuming. And it really freaks me out. You know, is education and information going to help you or is it going to scare you? I remember looking into, you know, the laser eye surgery years and years ago. It was actually called RK at the time. I still want to do it. But I read the part where you have to read what they're going to do to your eyeball and like sign off on it. And I'm like, I don't want to know. I don't know what want to know what you're going to do to my eyeball. I don't want to know what's touching my eyeball. And so sometimes too much education can scare us, but sometimes knowledge really is power. So going backwards from that, do you just need to know more about the procedure? Do you need to know people who did it, that it turned out well? So just like kind of applying this reverse engineering approach to, I have to make the appointment, but I'm afraid to make the appointment. I don't want to make the appointment because I don't know what's going to happen. And now it's going to be on your mind for the next 2 months.
Yeah.
What can you start doing now to mitigate that anxiety and the delay of doing it?
The biggest thing for me in this problem that I'm in this appointment is that somebody I don't know at all, I'm like, there's no way you can go meet them ahead of time. Hi, how are you? I have to meet you ahead of time because I'm stupid weird. Because I don't like to be touched. And if I'm going to be touched, the person has to be a person who is in my, I'm okay with this person bubble, right? There's not too many people in that bubble. There's like three or four people in that bubble. And so I have to get over the anxiety of, first of all, in my head, I know what is going to happen, but because I've heard about the process for a long time, everybody has, right? But they're going to be touching me without my clothes on type thing, freaks me out. And now I'm going to be anxious for a while. And really, there's like nothing that can help with that, but I'll let it go. It'll go out of my mind with work and stuff, as you know, and then once that day comes, I'll be like, oh, I have to do that today. And the panic will come back, but I'll be fine. It's just the way my brain works is awesomely weird sometimes.
Well, you can either try to dissociate from it in the moment, mm-hmm. or you never know if you called the medical office and say, I know I need to schedule this, and I'm having a lot of anxiety about somebody I don't know being so close to my body and touching it. Is there any way to set up a video call with the doctor, technician, nurse, whoever, who is going to be doing this? Do you think it's possible for them to give me 10 or 15 minutes before I go there? I know this is unusual. I know everybody is scrambling for time, but I'm really afraid this is going to keep me from taking care of my health.
That's a good idea.
All they can say is no, because you already have it in your mind that you're not going to be able to meet them. Mm-hmm. So what's the worst that can happen? At least you'll know you're a weirdo, right? At least you know you're a weirdo.
I fully embrace my weird, but none of it's malicious. And it's not because I'm a germaphobe or anything. I just have decided that it is my choice who gets to touch me nowadays. And it leads to interesting situations. Back to, like, reverse engineering. So I am going to try that. I'm going to try to call and see if maybe I can at least, you know, have a quick video call with the person if, you know, once they have that person scheduled, or at least can maybe get a couple minutes, because that is a good idea.
Yeah.
There's no reason. All his tests are from x-rays, and there's no reason for him to start going, I need to grope you today. And so he's really good, and people come from far away to be his patient. So I got lucky to get into his,
on his books.
And to see him.
I don't see any reason why they can't accommodate you in some way, or at least give you some time to answer questions, any concerns, and, you know, see what you can mitigate between now and November. Mm-hmm. And like you said, probably once you make the appointment, you'll put it out of your head until it pops up on your calendar, and it won't suck away important mental energy.
No, once it's in my calendar, I'm usually done with it. So I forget about it.
And also, the really important point is when you look at the end result, when you go from the end backwards, you need to envision best case scenario, not worst case scenario, that's a hard switch all in its own.
Yeah.
But I think getting to the end and saying, it's fine, everything is fine, I came out of it fine, everything was normal, I didn't freak out, I was relaxed and or at least disassociated so it won't traumatize me further. Mm-hmm. It's all good. And then what did I do before that to make it good? And then what did I do before that to make it good? And I'm not Miss Flowers and Sunshine positive thinker. That's not me. I'm not positive affirmations, and definitely have some, but I can see things coming out for the worst. That's also not natural, and we want to be aware of the pitfalls that could come up. That's a responsible thing to do, but sometimes it can just help to say, oh, that went fine. Yep, I'm imagining that it went well. Admit to yourself you're imagining it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to imagine that it went well and what that would look like. You're not saying it's going to go well. I'm praying that it's going to go well. I'm sending up flower birds into the sky, hoping that it goes well. I'm just imagining that if it went well, this is what it would look like. And this is mm-hmm. how I would feel.
So a couple of the people that I talk to are those hearts and flowery, everything will be fine people. But when they do their affirmations, it's not, I'm going to be fine, or I'm going to do this. Oh, I'm done with this test. Everything went fine and I am on to the next thing. So it would just be like a normal, yeah, it happened, but I'm good, whatever. Instead of saying, I'm going to be fine, or I'm going to pray that it'll be fine, because that's kind of putting in your head that it probably won't go well. So then when they do their positive affirmations, it's more, I went to my appointment, or I have left my appointment and I'm going out to lunch with a friend. just like completely glossing over it because it was probably, you know, in their mind, it was fine. So like, why would you stress over it and not go out to eat with somebody? You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the things we kind of circle back to tax paralysis is that often once we start something, the paralysis immediately goes away. And I like to use the example of you really need to clean your kitchen. Like it is a disaster. It is a hot mess. What happened this week? What gremlins were in there cooking overnight and tossing tomato sauce around the room? Like it's next level, right? And it is like, I don't even know where to start. I do not even know where to start right now. One thing, to pick up the sponge and just start rubbing the counter. And once, it doesn't matter if it's a dirty place or not, right? Just pick up the sponge, start wiping the counter. And then you're going to go, oh, my microwave's pretty dusty. While I'm here, let me do that. Well, I may as well pick up the microwave and go underneath in case anything has spilled lately. Well, now I may as well just wipe the whole counter down. Mm-hmm. And, oh, yeah, the sink. Well, I can't see the bottom of the sink right now, but all right, let me just finally dump this stuff in the dishwasher. If you don't have a dishwasher, maybe you have a tub in your sink. So at least you can put one pile instead of a pile. And the next thing you know, you've scrubbed every counter. You've picked up every small appliance. The stove is clean. The dishes are done. And you're ready to wash the floor if you feel like it. Maybe by now you do. Everything else looks good. May as well wash the floor. Even if it's just a quick mop with the little Swiffer or whatever generic form of that somebody might have. You don't have to take out the mop bucket and the big heavy mop. Or you go, I'm happy with everything at eye level. I'm not going to worry about the floor today. I'm all done with it. Mm-hmm. But most likely you'll wash the floor because now the rest of the kitchen looks great. And may as well just do that one last thing and finish it up. And you go, after this, I'm just sitting on the couch the rest of the day. But just that one thing, one square inch of cleaning the counter, it is going to build on itself. And you're like, I'm here already. I may as well. And immediately you're not paralyzed anymore. It's a very simplistic example. There are other things that, speaking of a medical appointment or some other big activity that has to be done, you have to call. make a call about something. For me, my big red flag is anything having to do with money. I go ballistic. So if I have to call the bank or if I have to call a medical provider and why are you charging me this and can I get a discount or however it works, can I have a payment plan? I will put that off and put that off and put that off because I might hear something I don't want to hear. Or there are definitely harder things than cleaning your kitchen is what I'm trying to say. But sometimes just taking one little action is enough to unblock yourself for a little while.
And if it doesn't, if it's just you picked up all the trash out of your kitchen, that's a good start. Maybe tomorrow you can do the dishes. Don't hang up on the one thing. I don't feel like doing anything else. Or I don't have the energy now. I'm sore. Whatever. Then, okay, stop. You did the trash. You did one step. So maybe tomorrow you do another step, whatever that may be. So be happy with where you are. Well, not happy. Be okay with where you are with the knowledge that you have more to do, but it can wait. So maybe you rest for an hour or two and you go back in there and go, I really need to get these dishes done. They're starting to smell. And so you wash the dishes. Okay. Well, now you've gotten that done. Why not wipe down the counters? Because the smell might be coming from them too. You know? Oh, you're wiping the counters down now? Wait, what about the stove? Are you really going to let it look like that? You know? Or you can, I've heard this thing from somewhere. I'm not sure where. Tell a friend because you know you're going to clean before this friend comes over the house. Tell them that they have to come over on Friday at 7 p.m. and you'll make sure your house is clean for them.
Or if it's a really, really, really.
And tell them to do it weekly so that you have your house done weekly. And like, you're not re-upping that invitation. You're just telling them flat out, come this time every week. And if it's not done, maybe they help you finish with whatever needs to be done.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is the whole body double concept. And maybe they don't even have to help you. All they have to do is sit here and witness that you're doing it. You chit chat, you listen to music, you're back and forth. They're doing whatever. They could be on their phone. They could be reading. They could be doing nothing to help you, but they're there to witness you and keep you company while you do it. Mm-hmm. And that is a concept from being a professional organizer. There was an example from a book I read about, I don't know, 20 years ago, a woman, an older woman, who she didn't like paying her bills. She had plenty of money. And this is like the old days. You didn't automate payment. I mean, you had to sit with your checkbook and write things out, right? She had the money. It wasn't that. She knew how. This wasn't something new to her. But she had hired a professional organizer who, amongst other things, would just come and sit with her while she sat down and wrote out her monthly bills. For some reason, it was just a thing that she couldn't get through without having a witness to that.
I have someone who sometimes needs to make phone calls that I work with, and he will call me and I'll mute myself and he'll call who he needs to call. I am just there because he needs that extra little push that allows him to make those calls that he needs to make.
And one thing I absolutely would not recommend, because it will be a disaster, is when we get that burst of energy and go, I think I'm going to reorganize my closet today. I'm going to get rid of the old stuff. I'm going to hang everything on color coordinate. And you empty out your entire closet onto your bed. And then you are very tired and you have lost your energy. And now you don't care. And now you're either going to sleep on your clothes or they're going to end up on the floor. And now you're going to have 7 loads of laundry to do the next time you get around to it. Do not go with your gut feeling that you should empty out every closet in the house, every drawer, all at the same time, because that energy and excitement won't last. You need to do sections of your closet, 10 hangers at a time, pull them out, put them back. One drawer, t-shirts only, leggings only, shoes only. Because there are certain ones of us, we do get super excited, you know, and I'm going to organize some stuff, and I'm on that online ordering thing that brings you things to your door and order all the stuff. And then it sits there for 3 weeks, because by the time it got there 3 days later, you didn't feel like putting together the shelf. Mm-hmm. You put together shelves like that 10 times before, all of a sudden you can't remember how to put the shelves together. It's very confusing. So absolutely do not do that in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, I've seen that video. Don't do that. There are plenty of people in those shorts online who have figured out that's a horrible idea, because for the first little bit, you're excited. You're finding stuff you ain't never seen in your closet before. Because, like, where did this tiara come from? When did I get Elmo pajamas?
And all of a sudden, you're wearing Tickle Me Elmo pajamas with a tiara, walking around with a bazooka and a Curious George doll on your back, and you haven't done anything at all. And for me, usually if I can't get something done in one day, I'm not gonna take it on. I have to be able to do it that day and then be done with it. If it's not done, mm-hmm. it's going to be 3/4 done for the next 3 months.
Yeah, it's going to. Yeah, my closet right now is a mess and I probably need to organize it, but I ain't pulling everything out at once, because that's not how you do it. With this mindfulness stuff, are you done your part?
I am.
Have we covered everything? Okay.
I think the only thing I would add on, which might lead into what you're going to say, is that we've talked a lot about personal situations, but your podcast is balancing business and some of these brain operations. And how does that carry over? Because we're not always given grace in the workplace. We might give ourselves grace, but how do we push through the things that are really hard in the workplace while having to mask what is happening with us? and not having the right support and accommodations. And then that's a whole other discussion, is mm-hmm. accommodations and being vulnerable in the workplace.
Yeah. I work for my own business because I am weird, and I am just quite sure that no corporation wants to deal with my weird. I have people that I enjoy working with, though, so I don't have a problem with that. Okay, guys. So after editing my podcast with Robin, I figured I needed to say something before what I say in the podcast. I'm a very straightforward person. I don't use sugary words. And I have been fighting a battle with my mental illness for a very, very long time. So what I say in this podcast may seem to be blunt and uncaring, but really, I'm not being blunt to be uncaring or to hurt people's feelings. I'm being blunt in the way that, like, I don't use flowery words and I just say things. I have been to the point where all you can do is lay in the bed. But at some point, you have to make a decision. And no, this is not me advocating for anything. This does not mean one of your decisions is to go, because that should never be an option. There are ways to get help if you need it, and there are little steps you can do to come back to a life and to become functional again. And my hope is that my podcast can help people find that spark that gives them the why to stay here and to start working on themselves so that they can get better, do better, be better. It's not an overnight fix. I say brain dead for about 10 years where I was not functional. And so you have to find your timing. But eventually you have to make a decision on why you're still here and what that means going forward. And I hope that that means that you find something that makes you want to stay, and you can build a wall between you and that option and not do it ever. Thank you for listening, and I hope that the second half of the podcast is informative. So what I want to say is a PSA about some of the stuff that we talk about, like stuff we talked about today, stuff I've talked about in the future, stuff I've said in the past, and stuff I'm going to say in the future. The main thing for me is, no matter what you're doing, no matter if you have mental health issues or not, you have to find your why, right? You cannot give a fig about the business you work for, but there's a reason you're there. And if you hold on to that why, then you're just going to do what you need to do to get to that why, right? You're going to keep working and things. Instead of losing focus and going, everything sucks, I don't want to work here anymore, I'm never going to do this again, I have to quit, and I'm never going to have another job in my life. And you know how that kind of thing blows up in your brain. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you do have mental health problems, you have to find your why. Why are you here? Why are you staying here? There are reasons. My most unselfish reason, I don't want my body to be found by somebody else. And that means, in that case, they now have mental health problems because they found my body. Because I deliberately put my body in a place and now they have to find me. And that's not fair. That's not fair to anybody. So, not doing nothing. The sun could do its thing, and I still wouldn't do anything because I know that I'm not going to hurt the people around me by doing that to myself, right? So that's a big one for me. I have Kim. She is my person. She is my safety net. She's my calm. She is my best friend, right? I am not, because I live with her and her husband, I am not going to be the reason that, like, finally gives her something to be actually sad. That would piss me off. So I'm not going to do anything to myself. I have that solid core. I'm not. Now, are there days that are hard? Oh, heck yeah. There are extremely hard days. There are days where I'm sitting on my bed going, I don't know how I'm going to survive this day. Because this has been harder for me. But I will never do anything. There is never any thought that goes through my head that I believe in my core enough to actually make me go against my whys. Okay? So if you have a why that is strong enough, it is basically a 500-foot thick brick wall that is not coming down. And if that's a block, you're never going with that option. It's not going to happen. And now, because you don't have that option, that means you have to live, right? Now, why? What are you going to do? You have to do something. You cannot always just be in bed crying. Yes, it's hard. I understand. Look, I have had my time where that's what I did. But I got my brain back. You know, the fog kind of lifted and I started doing more and more. I couldn't have done this podcast a year ago, right? Because there was just no way. I wasn't prepared for it. I was too self-conscious about it. I'm still not wholly behind the part where people see my face. Like, seriously, that part gets me. But once you have your why, again, you step forward. And it is freaking baby steps to start with. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to get out of bed for an hour today. I'm going to go sit on the couch and look at the sun through the front windows. And then I'm going to go back to bed because screw this, it's too bright. Right? And then you take baby steps. You're up for a good portion of the day. Now, what are you going to do for work? You can't go work at Walmart if you're struggling to get out of bed every day. But you need something that you're passionate about. Can you draw? Get into doing that. People need drawings, even with AI being out there. Because AI can't put words on anything because it can't spell for nothing. It can't do hands. We got fingers that are missing or 17 fingers on a hand, right? So there's always that. There's always something you can do. There's almost never someone, I'm saying almost just to cover my butt here, that can't do anything to help somebody else. And that's what you do at first. You're not doing it for money at first. Because you're not ready to do that, right? You're doing it to help someone. Oh, my graphic design friend needs help with this thing. I'll help her. And then that way I keep getting stuff coming to me. And eventually you start to charge because, hey, I'm doing more work. I'm on top of it. I can meet deadlines. I'm doing good. Everything that is in my podcast is for after you have found your why and decided to move. If you're still laying in bed, I feel for you, but you're not going to get anything because then task paralysis is going to be a problem for you. Right. Or it is the biggest problem probably because you just don't know where to start, right? So start with the basic tasks. Get a hold of a friend and say, I need something to do to help somebody. Do you know of anything you know I can do that I could help somebody with? And then work from there. I started doing office manager-y type stuff way back when I didn't have my brain, when I was fully in the fog, because a friend kept saying, here, I have this thing. You're good with computers. I need you to do this thing. He needed me to do an Excel file. He didn't know how to do it. It was a thing.
Right.
And he just kept giving me tasks to do. And it took years for me to come out of that hole. Like, there's no why. There's no why there. It took years for me to come out of that hole. This is not a same day magic cure all. Oh, yes. She said, get up and do. So I'm going to go do that. It doesn't work that way, right? But once I came back to myself, once I had my brain back, once that fog lifted for me, I told him, I was like, I am me. Tell me what to do. And he gave me more and more tasks, and we worked well together, and we made it. Like, I was able to do things. I became this good from that, right? It was always a step. Like, I was always working with therapy people so that I could get better. If you're not in therapy, you need to get in therapy. There are ways to do therapy, even if you have no money. I mean, you have to figure it out. You have to go to your social services or whatever and say, I need therapy help. And they have to find you help. Go to the hospital. Tell them you need therapy, that you're thinking thoughts that you shouldn't be thinking. You might get a 3-day stay, but that will put you on some kind of medication. And then when you get out, you get told where to go to find a therapist. Usually. Yeah. Some places do this better than others.
Mm-hmm.
But I could sit here and say, don't do this, do this, don't do that, do this. But it's not going to be helpful. Okay? And I'm not saying any of this to be offensive. Nobody should be like, well, I don't feel like I can get up today. That's fine. You have to decide. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to find your why. Why are you here on this planet? Who are you going to help? You know, do the who, what, where, when, and how.
Yep.
Make those choices. Once you have those five, you can move forward. You can start doing. Find a friend who is doing big things and see if you can help them in any way. Ask them, can I help you with your emails so that I can keep you on track so you don't miss anything? Can I do whatever? I don't know people's skills right now because I'm sitting here. I don't know people. I don't go outside. It's fine. It's scary out there and I'm allergic.
I understand.
But
there's also volunteer opportunities. I get people need to make money, but if looking for a job or getting some revenue started is not possible, look into what you can do. And it doesn't have to be a lot of interaction with people if that doesn't work. If you love animals, look at the shelter. You might not be cuddling animals all day. You might be cleaning kennels, but you're around, or packing lunches to distribute, doing something in the back, packing up school supplies to distribute to schools, just to get out, practice getting out in a low pressure situation. And also making a commitment that you would feel really badly not keeping.
Yeah.
If you're going to stay in bed, can you at least watch cute puppy videos to spark some dopamine in the brain?
If you're not at the point where you feel like you can get out of bed, there are things, you have your device, right? They have different things you can do with a phone to make money. And no, I'm not talking about those game scam things. Please don't do those. Like, that's totally a scam and ain't nobody giving you money from them.
Yeah. No, taking quizzes. I have a colleague who has a number of disabilities, and for a long time, her ability to work and gain revenue on a regular basis is spotty, but she started out making $2 to take a quiz, $3 to review a piece of software. That's just what she did, as she could, when she could, for those little bits coming in. And then sometimes she does get bigger jobs, and then sometimes she cannot.
With the mental health, when you are trying to move forward, after you found your why, it's going to be very important for you to help people. Because the more you're helping someone, no matter what it is, right? With helping somebody, you get that good feel-good feeling, right? Mm-hmm. I'm helping this person do X, Y, Z. So that makes me feel better because I'm helping. And it also gives you that push. Because there are days, when I don't want to get out of bed. I had that this morning. I laid in that bed for a good 45 minutes because I was like, I am not getting up today. Oh, crap, I have that podcast. Okay, yeah, I have to get up today. But there's just, you have those days. They happen. But if you have something where you're supposed to be helping somebody, or you've made a commitment to meet with somebody, then you have to. Your word is your bond. It is my full belief that if you tell somebody you're going to do something, you do it. Doesn't matter to me what happened. Like, if you are absolutely down because of COVID or whatever bid, whatever new disease comes out, right? Okay, that's probably a good reason not to do the thing, right? Because we don't need to be making people sick by doing the thing when we're sick.
Right.
But at the same time, that can't be your excuse every time. Nobody's had COVID 300 times. Okay. If you say you're going to go to a networking meeting, go. It's hard. My second podcast was on networking, and the mental health side was on gamifying how to actually do something. If you're like, oh, no, I can't do it. I'm frozen. Can't do it. You know? So you gamify it. If I get out of bed for 3 hours today, then I can do something special. I don't know what. You'd have to decide that.
Yeah.
But you just kind of, okay, well, that's getting easy for me. I can stay out of bed for 4 hours now. Okay, well, now do it for 8 hours and, you know, keep going. Keep building on it. Your last goal should be built upon. Never backtrack from a goal, because that will make you start. That will defeat the purpose. You'll slide backwards instead of moving forward.
Yeah.
The whole point that I was trying to make with all of this is, if you're not ready, or you can't push, can't do, you don't know your why or whatever, do that. Do the groundwork. Lay it good, because your groundwork is what's going to keep you moving. Talk with a therapist. You do the things you need to do to get there. My advice comes from, how many years have I been in therapy now? A lot. Let's just say a lot. And I've had bad therapists. I had a therapist who decided that because I said I didn't want to wake up in the morning, when you go to bed type thing, that I didn't want to wake up in the morning, he decided that was a 3-day offense. I did not like that that was a 3-day offense, and I was very upset with him. Who wants to wake up? It's weird.
Right.
Anyway. And I've had I had a therapist say a lot to me that I've just been through so much trauma. I know I've been through trauma. I would like you to stop saying that now.
Right.
That's just annoying me. You know, so I've had that kind of bad therapist. The therapist I have now, both of them, because I'm seeing two different people, they both know about each other, but they are really good at helping me see where I'm going and stuff. I have great relationships with them. But you have to have a support system, whether it's a therapist or just a regular person who you have bonded with and can be there for you. The other thing, you can't always blame your illness. I have never once in my life said I did this thing because I have bipolar, or I did that thing because I'm probably autistic, or I did this thing because of that, right? That does come into effect when it's physical, because like my knees, I'm not climbing Mount Everest stairs, okay? It's just not happening. I don't know why stairs are so hard. I can walk up a hill, a decent sized hill, pretty good. But stairs, my knees complain. So there are things I have to physically remove myself from just because it's painful. But mentally, you can't do that. The more you back away and push yourself into a corner, no matter what it is, PTSD, BPD, bipolar, autism, but like anything, you can't always blame that. Now, can I blame the need for having to have sensory, making sure I have headphones on something? Probably. Do I need to? No. I just put them on. And people either understand or they don't. I don't need to be shouting, I have autism. I have a right to be here. Nobody cares. Everybody wants to walk with their life and let you walk with your life just however you need it. The one thing you can't do is start screaming in public, that kind of thing. Nobody wants to hear that. Right? Mm-hmm. But the limits that you're putting on yourself because you're saying, oh, I have this, or oh, I have that. This is why I do this. This is why I do that. Okay. No, they're excuses. And I have them too. So like I'm pointing to myself too. But they're excuses. Instead of saying, oh, I have autism. I'm sorry. That's why I messed that up. Admit default without it. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't plan correctly. I will fix that moving forward.
I think there's a big difference between using it as an excuse to other people, but identifying the awareness to yourself. You can say, I have sensory issues because I'm probably autistic, but what can I do about it? Because I don't need to tell everybody this. I can just do this. Or yes, I did this because of my bipolar, or my emotional swings don't seem right to me. I probably should see somebody about that, but not put it out. Scream it from the rooftops. I have this, and so you need to excuse everything that I do from here on out. So it's super important that one is an awareness and one is using it as an excuse or an obstacle.
Mm-hmm. For me, the sensory issues, I wear my headphones because I wear them at church. So I have been asked by our bishop, why are you wearing those? And I tell him, it's because people like to let their kids scream in church. I don't know why people need to be reminded to shush their kids in church, but that's a thing too. But I have sensory issues. It's very painful for me when kids scream because of the pitch of their voice. I can't handle it. So I have to wear headphones that block the sound so that I can survive this hour. And that's fine. They're fine with them. I never once said, oh, I might be autistic. Like, they had nothing to do with the conversation because it was just, why are you using the headphones? Because the sounds that the kids are screaming at hurt my ears and it's too loud. I can't handle it. Oh, okay. Well, then you do what you have to do. Right?
And so, you would have to say that anyway, because to simply say, I might be autistic doesn't mean anything to a person that doesn't know the effect autism has on our mental, emotional, and physical environments.
So with my podcast, my mental health stuff, are my podcast in general is to teach people. I want to teach people different things that they can do with their business. Okay. So, you know, as we talked about today, we have the task paralysis. I've talked before about networking and gamifying things. I've talked before about how to prioritize your work. So you have your big things that you put in first, and then you put some smaller things in, and then you do smaller things, and then you put water, you know, the whole jar thing from the college days, right?
Right.
I made that connection like halfway through that talk. But all of that can only happen once you're ready to do, right? None of those things are helpful to somebody who's staying, who has not yet moved forward. So I'm not in meaning any offense to anybody in those situations. You are in that spot because of things that should not have happened to you. You are there because of things that should not happen to anyone, no matter what age it happened at. Like, it shouldn't happen to anyone. And I completely empathize, because not only have I had those things happen, not only have I been in that spot where I could not move because of the depression that was covering me, like a heavy, heavy, like worse than, you know, I love my weighted blanket, but like five of them, I wouldn't be able to move. And that is kind of what some people feel when they're stuck. And I totally get it. But the process of moving those, shifting those blankets off of you so that you can move again, you have to acknowledge that, yes, this thing was horrible. Here's another thing I'm going to tell you that's different than what a lot of people will say. You don't have to forgive anybody. You don't have to forget anything to move forward. Mm-hmm. No. I have people in my life, not in my life anymore because they're dead. Thank God. But and I didn't do anything to them.
You want to be clear.
Let's be clear. I didn't do that. But I still haven't forgiven them.
Mm-hmm.
I may not. Like, I'll probably go into the afterlife and kick tail and take names because of what happened to me. Right?
Yeah.
I have that right to say I'm not forgiving you until I can talk to you face to face. And I can't do that with either of them because they're dead. And so I don't forgive them. I have not forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
But I have moved forward. I'm not stuck at 11 anymore. Do I want old people around me? Not exactly. But I'm moving forward, right? I am putting one foot in front of the other, and I am helping people. I am helping people with this podcast. I am helping people with the work I do, because let me tell you, some of the people I work with are not computer experts. So I'm glad that I get to take on that work for them and get things done in a way that they didn't think they would be able to do it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I love that. But that's how I help people, with knowledge that I've just kind of picked up because I can learn programs easy.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped me come out of the brain fog of depression. I still have 100 problems with me. I still have 1,000 medical. I have 1,000 medical things after my name. I got the alphabet soup, but it ain't even the good one, like doctor of or all them other ones, right? I got the cheapo alphabet soup that everything looks like a no, okay? But, and that's for physical and mental. I am not okay. But I work at it every single day to be able to go and do and be. And until you're ready to let go of those labels, to let go of everything and just say, that is something that I can deal with after I'm dead, maybe, because I can't handle it right now. That's fine. I know a lot of therapists are big on the, you have to forgive everybody who's hurt you. No, you don't have to take that advice. You don't have to forgive anybody. You don't have to hug anybody. You don't have to let people touch you. You don't have to let people do anything to you. Right? Unless you go to a chiropractor and you're paying him to touch you. The biggest message that what I want to come from me is you can move forward from the worst things. I have had some horrible crap happen to me. I have some horrible things where my body hates me. But I can move forward. I can still do things. And so can anyone else. If they follow the steps, find your why and go help someone until the fog lifts. It's going to be hard. This is not rainbows and sunshine time. That will come later. Right now, it's time to get to work.
And yeah, like I kind of like to say about, and maybe it never will be rainbows and sunshine. Mm-hmm. I like to say you don't have to love yourself, but you can just be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate myself. Well, tell yourself, look in the mirror and say, I love you. And I'm like, that's ridiculous. But I can be neutral. I don't have to be body positive, but I can be neutral. I don't have to hate it. There's a big space between where people think you should be and where you are. And along the way, you can just be neutral.
Mm-hmm. So, not saying you have to fix yourself for anybody else. You're not doing the work. You can't do the work for anybody else. It has to be for you. It has to be for you. Because if you're, oh, well, I'm going to do better because my best friend is doing better than me and I want to do better than her. What if she gets a big raise all of a sudden and starts making millions and you never get there? How are you ever going to be happy with your life or even mm-hmm. content with your life because you're so far behind her and you thought you could be better than her? Do not compare yourself to others. Comparison is the thief of all joy.
Yes, I was just going to say that. I was going to say, Brene Brown says.
I don't even know who said it. I just know.
Brene Brown is the person I remember. She might have gotten it from somebody else. But yes, comparison is the thief of joy.
Because, and I've said this at church. I've said this probably in another one of these podcasts again. I don't know. I say it a lot. But if you go outside and decide that you're going to think that you are better than that homeless person that's sitting there going through a hard time, right? You have a house, you have an apartment, you have whatever. You're doing so much better than them. I'm great. I'm doing good. I'm better than them. What happens in a week or two, because it has happened, when that homeless person is standing on that corner with a new sign that says, I don't need your money. Thank you for all your help. I now have a job and an apartment. Thank you so much. Now what are you going to do? You are going to cannonball to the deep and beyond the floor because all of a sudden you're not better than him anymore. So you can't be thinking you're better than anyone. We're all at a different path in our journey. And I hate saying that word now because of stupid ChatGPT and everything's a journey to AI. But it really is a journey when you're talking about mental health, because it's not like day one is not the end. Day one is definitely the beginning, no matter where you are in your part of it. And so you just, I just want everybody to be better. I want to not have to think about the things that have happened to me. I want to be able to go to doctor's appointments and be completely normal, right? But guess what? Normal doesn't exist.
It doesn't.
There's no such thing as normal. Because guess what? Even the person that you think is so-called normal will be weird to somebody else.
Yeah, so I think
normal doesn't exist.
After a lot of more evolution, the words neurotypical and neurodivergent will not exist anymore. Because who decided what neurotypical was? Like you say, somebody on the outside might be normal. They might be the biggest demon behind closed doors. We don't know what's in their head. We have seen terrible, terrible, terrible people in history who, oh, but they were the nicest guy. He belonged to the church and he did this and he volunteered. And yes, and he also, you ate a lot of people along the way in secret. So we don't know what, that certainly isn't neurotypical.
Yeah. So like I said, whoever you're holding up as normal, somebody else will think they're completely odd and, whatever. And look, let's remember, every single time that they interview somebody who lived near a cereal library, it's always, oh, he was so quiet and he was so great to have as a neighbor. And it's just, he was doing, we liked having him here. Okay. So mm-hmm. those people thought he was normal. Do you want to be considered normal now? I don't think so. I don't want to be a serial killer. Cyber. I'm not saying the other word because holy cow, would YouTube have a fit. Life is hard. Don't make it harder by comparing yourself to others. Life is hard. Don't compare yourself to whatever alphabet soup somebody else puts behind your name. If you go and you become a doctor, congratulations, you have the good alphabet soup. If you become somebody with mental health problems, I am so sorry, you now have nose and O's soup after your name. Okay? You get to choose what your boundaries are, whether you're normal or not. You get to live your life by doing things that matter to you. So you don't like going outside. You don't want to do that. That's okay. I work from home every single day. I leave the house once a week for doctor's appointments and on Sunday for church. I am a creature of a habit. And you can do you, right? If you have doctor's appointments, then there's that. You have them. Maybe you have a tablet you could bring with you, and you can still be working on that piece of art that you're doing for somebody. Or, you know what? If you are having problems figuring out what you can do to help others, contact me. Come join my Discord channel that I am starting. And I will help you. We can have a discussion and we can figure out what you can do to help others. What is your strong suit? I will do an hour-long consult with anybody to help them figure out, you know, what they should, what they could be doing. And it could be, because it's totally up to you. Even if you come talk to me and you don't like what I have to say, you can go choose something else. Okay? So I am going to be starting to do some recordings of some of the apps and different programs that I use, not only for my podcast, but for when I'm working. And that will be on a playlist on YouTube once I start doing those. I'm not sure when that will come out. I'm also putting together a Welcome to Alignable type course so that people can connect on Alignable. A lot of my business has come from Alignable. And so I would love to help other people be able to do that. And it's just all starting to roll.